In your face. Well, Meta is suppressing community health promotion content. On the line, we have Daniel Reeders from NAPWA, the National Association of People Living with HIV Australia, to talk about the Not Safe for Health project. Daniel, welcome to 3CR.
Hi, James. Thanks for having me.
It's great to hear your voice, Daniel. This is a huge problem for a lot of organisations, not just in the community health space, but in the broader queer space as well. Tell us about the project Not Safe for Health.
So this came about because we launched a really important campaign to let the general public know about the U equals U message, that undetectable viral load means someone can't pass on HIV through sex. And we launched that campaign and very quickly found our ads taken down on Meta, on YouTube and on TikTok. And it was because of complaints received from people who were hostile to the message, unwilling to kind of hear an HIV message as being relevant to their lives. And platforms like Meta increasingly take those reports at face value, take the content down, sometimes even suspend our accounts, and that stops a really important message from getting out to the community.
So it's not just the algorithm that's doing this, it's also real human beings, real people complaining directly to Meta because they have a political agenda that's anti-sex or anti-queer or anti-HIV.
That's exactly right. It's a combination of hostile community groups and Meta and their moderation policies. And the really tricky thing about that is that Meta can kind of say, well, the complaints are real. They can throw their hands up and say it's not our fault. But in fact, Meta a few years ago took away our ability to target our campaigns based on gender and sexuality. So we can't ensure that they go to queer people or to trans people. We can't ensure that they reach our target audiences. And therefore, if they go to people who are outside our target audience and they get hostile because they're not expecting to see HIV content in their feed.
That is so odd. So Meta is allowing the content to go to the people who will be outraged, the people who will be offended by it, which I kind of guess is their business model, isn't it? To, stir up outrage, but they're not actually directing it to the people who need it.
That's exactly right. I think you've hit the nail on the head that their business model these days is rage baiting people, encouraging people to get into fights online because that generates lots of engagement, lots of statistics that appeal to a platform like Meta as things like stickiness, people's willingness to come back to a post and keep commenting. All of that stuff is stronger for conflict than it is for a public health message reaching its intended audience.
So when they get those complaints, why don't they just ensure the content doesn't go to those people who have complained? I mean, they must know about, queerphobic political campaigns, because it's all around the world,
yeah,
with far-right actors actually, are using social media to stir up a right-wing agenda. Why are they complicit with that?
They know about it and they love it. It's when Donald Trump came back into power for the second time, Meta announced that they were changing their moderation policy to allow, for instance, right-wing actors to say that trans people have mental illness instead of gender diversity. And they recognised that with the right-wing in power in the United States, which is their largest market, that they needed to signal a kind of a different stance on moderation, one that was less hostile to those right-wing voices and more tolerant of right-wing opinions.
So this is meaning that, people who really need, prevention information, information to ensure that they can maintain their health, their living with HIV, that's curtailed, that's suppressed. And that is so interesting because we've also seen under the Trump administration the defunding of USAID. So people in developing countries, in places like Africa, are not getting information they need, and they're not not getting services that they need, treatments that they need to stay alive. And Meta is kind of, you know, an accessory to that through this suppression of information.
Absolutely. And we know that people who stigmatise HIV often have the greatest need for accurate education and information about HIV. The stigma becomes a bit of an internal barrier or an obstacle to learning about how they can protect themselves and how they can protect other people. So the people who are having this hostile response to our campaign, they're actually, ironically, the people that most need to be reached by that campaign. And they are missing out when they complain about our content and get it taken down.
Yeah, I mean, if you're running a campaign about combating stigma,
yes.
It's ironic, isn't it, that the people who are actually needing to have, you know, their stigma addressed are the ones complaining and Meta's enabling that.
Exactly right. And it's really interesting to Can't Pass It On campaign, napweb.org.au/can't pass it on, is a beautiful example of a non-confrontational anti-stigma campaign. It doesn't call anyone out. It doesn't say, oh, we need zero stigma, as if people understand what that means. It simply explains in a friendly kind of aesthetic way, this is the reality of living with HIV in 2026.
So NAPWHA partnered up with Swinburne University on your Not Safe for Health project. You did a research project. What did you discover?
Yeah, really interesting. We undertook an extended period of research with the communications officers working for NAPWHA member organisations and the volunteers who were trying to reach out to community groups affected by HIV. And we discovered that they're exposed to a lot of hate speech, and this is posing a real problem for organisations. So if you have the youngest member of your organisation who also looks after the TikTok account and the socials, and that person is being exposed to really vile examples of hostility, hate speech, HIV stigma. And organisations are having a real problem working out how do we protect our staff, but also protect the communities that we're trying to reach out to, because they're exposed to this content as well. So the Not Safe for Health project comes up with a bunch of strategies that organisations can use to protect their staff, protect their communities, and try to minimise the risks and the harms of social media engagement.
Wow. So comms directors, communications staff at organisations all around the country in the queer space, in the HIV space, in the community health space, are being subjected to hate speech. Is it an orchestrated campaign, or is it just random dudes, or is it a combination?
It is a combination. So a lot of it is random dudes who are surprised to see HIV in their newsfeed and react badly to it. But we do know that sites like 4chan have forums where people will go, hey, look at this campaign, insert a bunch of words that I can't say on radio, and let's go and stuff them up. Let's report their campaign or their post. Let's leave nasty comments on their posts. And they do that for fun, essentially. So we call that brigading, and it's a really common problem for HIV and queer community health organisations.
So how are organisations dealing with that internally? I mean, that's a health and safety issue.
It is a health and safety issue, and one of the interesting things we did in this study was we unleashed a pair of gun lawyers on the problem and said, tell us what our legal recourse might look like. And they went through all the options from privacy law to anti-discrimination law to negligence to employment law, all of the possible legal avenues that could be pursued. And they found there's really not much that we can do. Unless we're going to launch a multi-million dollar lawsuit against Meta, we're a bit stuffed. So that leads us to our backup position, which is advocacy, it's media outreach. It's trying to shame platforms into tackling the problems that we've identified.
And that worked really well with the Q News article about the Meta sites, the Instagram sites of the Laird and some other clubs being taken down by Meta, and they ran an article basically naming and shaming them.
Exactly.
And it worked.
Does work.
But not until a month had passed. So, you know, that really does a lot of damage, doesn't it? It really affects businesses. It really affects community messaging around health. It even affects information about one's legal rights, right?
That's exactly right. And my heart goes out to people in community groups and small creative and cultural productions who are facing these problems without the benefit of having researchers on speed dial and lawyers that can help them consult around these issues. Major shout out to Laura at Q News, who's been covering these issues and helping to kind of even up the playing field a bit for small producers who are facing the Not Safe for Health project problem and the Not Safe for Cultural Production problem in their own lives.
So Meta could just change the algorithm and fix this.
They could fix this overnight. And part of what I hope to do with this project is to raise their awareness of the impact this is having on public health and community rights. And in that way, to alert them to the fact that Australia is actually quite punchy when it comes to regulating the social media platforms. And that if they don't want to regulate this themselves on their own, then we will be approaching the Australian regulators to say, hey, you need to guarantee access to important public health information.
Okay, so this is an issue for the Communications Minister federally.
Absolutely, and the eSafety Commission. They are very busy prosecuting bans on young people accessing social media, and that in its own right can diminish the access young people have to public health and community health information. If you're a queer young person and you need information about HIV, increasingly that information is only delivered via social media. And therefore, if you can't get onto Facebook, if you can't get onto Instagram, you're going to miss out on those campaigns. So it's really important that the Australian regulator recognises the need for people to be able to access campaigns, content and communities.
I mean, it's interesting, the government is so focused on addressing hate speech, not just federally, but also state governments as well. I mean, here in Victoria, we currently have an LGBTIQA plus hate crimes inquiry that recently held hearings. It's going to be releasing a report in September. And of course, the link between, you know, social media sites propagating hate and hate crimes has got to be pretty strong, right?
It's definitely a key kind of driving force behind the increasing prevalence of hate speech in our society. But the one thing I would like to note is that there's absolutely nothing to prevent someone from stigmatising people with HIV, from disclosing their status outside of after a hookup or a personal relationship. HIV generally drops off the radar when we talk about hate speech, and I would love to see that inquiry into hate speech in Victoria consider how this is impacting on people with HIV, on their lives, their communities, and their access to information.
Right. So that's a really interesting point. So the terms of reference aren't giving adequate, you know, acknowledgement of hate speech around HIV.
That's correct. It is against the law to vilify someone based on their HIV status. But if someone discloses their HIV status to me and then I go and spread the word about that in my community, and this happens all the time, that's not against the law. There's absolutely no legal recourse against me for doing that.
And then, of course, you think, well, how many hate crimes, you know, via Grindr and other social media apps are also being, done because people have misconceptions around HIV and HIV transmission. That's really full on, and it's not being given adequate reference in the inquiry.
I don't think so. I would love to see more attention paid to those questions.
You mentioned YouTube and TikTok before. So it's not just Meta where this algorithmic pushing of hate is happening. It's YouTube as well and TikTok, right?
Yeah, that's correct. And TikTok is kind of the Wild West. It's extremely hard to work out how they regulate moderation on that site. But YouTube is quite public about their moderation guidelines. And if content is educational, then even if it includes nudity, it's still supposed to be allowed to remain on YouTube. But what that creates is a problem we call shadow banning, where you can post your stuff on YouTube, but YouTube just won't show it to anybody. It won't prioritize that to be shown to people in their discovery algorithm. So I can give you the link and you'll be able to see it. But if you're just browsing YouTube or even if you're searching for information about HIV, that content, if it's been shadow banned, is not going to appear to you.
Yeah, and look, that's a big issue across multiple platforms. I mean, this show has had issues with that with, Facebook, for example, for years, where your content is throttled and only goes to a few people. Gone are the days where all your followers used to see your posts. Now
that's
it only
correct.
Goes to a few of them. And, if you're doing a podcast link, for example, not all of what you have posted is actually seen. Sometimes all they can see is just the link without the image and not all of the information, all the text in the podcast.
That's exactly
link.
Right. Yeah. And the goal, their incentive there is to throttle access to that content so that we pay to boost the content and enlarge the potential audience for it. But we do that because we want to get our campaigns out there, but because we can't target them according to the communities that are most at risk for HIV, boosting a post just means it's seen by a very large off-target audience and it generates that kind of hostility and that hate speech that we were talking about.
So they take your money and you still don't get what you paid for.
That's exactly right.
That is so full on, isn't it? And of course, if you actually do boost your content and then stop boosting it, then they throttle it again. So it becomes this vicious cycle, right?
Absolutely. And every time we boost, we know that we need to spend the next 24 or 48 hours watching the account like a hawk because there's going to be vile comments left on those posts. So it's a real double-edged sword. We're increasing the audience for this, but increasing the audience means more people in those off-target audiences generating that hostility that we have to watch out for.
And they change the algorithm so that those posts aren't necessarily moderated. They go up and they're allowed in many instances.
Yeah, in the Royal Commission on Anti-Semitism, the spokesperson from Meta confirmed that before they changed their moderation approach, they were taking down about 6 million items per year proactively. So they were using filters, probably using AI or machine learning to identify if a post contains this word, it's very unlikely that it is a reclaimed slur or that it's being used in a positive way. Now, since they've changed their approach to be more reactive, they're taking down about 1.5 million items per year, which still sounds like quite a lot, but it means that we're letting through 4.5 million pieces of really hostile content, and we're waiting for organisations to either delete that or hide the post or report the comment.
Wow. And I mean, the cost of that is immeasurable, isn't it, in terms of what it can evoke, what kind of, terrible impact that can have on people's lives. And then there's the resources that organisations have got to put in, as you say, monitoring their posts.
Yeah, I really worry about people who have been living with HIV for a longer period of time who were gay at a time when hearing a slur on the streets meant you were probably about to get bashed. And when they see that content on our post, they're dealing with epidemic trauma, they're dealing with trauma from homophobic violence. The consequences of seeing that kind of material are really serious, and that's why we invest so much personal time and organisational resources in watching our posts like a hawk to make sure that we're not letting that kind of remark stay visible.
Well, Not Safe for Health has produced a PDF that's a legal and policy guide that considers the responsibilities of platforms, HIV organisations and regulators to address social media risks and harms. And you've also come up with a media and communications guide, once again in PDF, that provides tips and strategies for community-led public health organisations facing this problem. Daniel Readers, a senior policy officer, projects officer, with the National Association of People with HIV Australia. Thank you so much for joining us today. The wonderful Daniel Readers there.